Oh, this is the wrong one. Hold on. There we go. Can you see this one?
Yes.
What the half shekel. Okay. All right. Hello, everybody. Today is Wednesday, February 16th, and we are here at the JCC in Houston, Texas, for our weekly lunch and learn on big ideas in the Parsha. And today's big idea is entitled, What the Half Shekel Can Teach Us About Living a Whole Life. I thought that was a catchy title. And Ron mentioned before class started that he years back stopped going to classes because the teachers would give enticing titles to get people to come and then not talk about the topic. But he complimented me and said, I provide titles and actually do talk about the topic. So this is, we will keep that model today and we will stay on topic. And Ron, you'll have to give me a grade after class if I'm sufficiently staying to the topic. But now I know that someone's watching. Okay, so this week's Parsha has the mitzvah of machatzit ha-shekel, giving half shekel, which is which applies in two ways. It applies in one way directly toward the context of the Parsha, of what's going on in the Parsha, and applies in the second way beyond the Parsha forever, at least while the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash were standing. So what am I talking about? First, the Pesukim. You have the Pesukim in front of you, the first source on page one, and I will number the sources. Oops, sorry about that. What just happened? I lost the sources on the screen. Hold on a second. We'll go back to them. Sorry about that. Okay. Did it again. Oh, I know why that's happening. Excuse me. Here we go. Source number one on the screen from Sefer Shemot, the book of Exodus. Ki tisat rosh b'nei Yisrael l'fkudeihem, v'nadnu ish kofer nafsho l'Hashem b'fkod otam, v'lo yeh b'hem negef b'fkod otam, zeyidnu kol avera pikudim, machatzit ha-shekel b'shekel ha-kodesh. God is commanding Moshe to count the Jewish people, to have a census of the Jewish people, and instead of counting the people, the commandment is that everyone give half a shekel, and then those half shekels will be counted, and by counting the half shekels, we'll know how many people there are. That is the importance of half shekel from the context of this week's Parsha. We're going to see the importance of it further down the context of the, as I said before, the Beit HaMikdash, when we read the Sefer HaChinuch. But that's the context of the Parsha. They want to count the Jewish people, and we're not going to get into why they didn't count the people, why they counted half shekel instead of counting the people. Right now, we're going to touch on that a little bit later, but the Pesukim seem to indicate that doing so would be not a good idea, right? If you do so, then there may be a plague. And so by doing a half shekel, they will avoid the plague. Okay? Question? Yeah, go ahead. Andrew's asking a question.
I was just looking at this translation according to their army enrollment. I've never seen that before, the first paragraph.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Right, because this is a certain age.
But they mentioned age in the next one. That one is army. I never heard of it.
Yeah, let's see if there's a better translation of this. Let's see.
Well,
that wasn't voluntary then.
No, but you don't understand what I'm saying. It's an enrollment.
I'm saying it was unavoidable. Yeah. It was, but that's a good question. I don't love that translation either. I sometimes just take the translation from. Sometimes I just take the translation from Sefaria, but it's not a great translation.
It's okay. I just was curious about it because I've never seen it before.
Yeah, but there's a better. Hold on one second.
What does that even say?
Lifkudehem. So that does refer to army service, but there's definitely a better a better translation, and there is, I just can't seem to find it now, usually a good, what's the one I'm looking for? Yes, this sentence was only over men 20 years and above. All right, let's carry on. Okay, I'm going to put the share back on. Okay, so now they're counting. And now let's look at the Sefer HaChinuch, because we have to get a sense of why, how this commandment went beyond that particular year when the census was going to happen. There wasn't always going to be a census. And so what happened after this year? So that is where the Sefer HaChinuch comes in. Source number 2 on the page. Mitzvah netinat machatzit ha-shekel b'shana, the commandment of giving of the half a shekel during the year, that each one of Israel from 20 years and up, whether poor or rich, give the half shekel, which is the weight of 10 gerah of silver, each year to the hand of the priests, as it is stated. This is what everyone who passes the count shall give. Now, technically speaking, it didn't have to go to the Kohanim, to the priests. It had to go to the treasurers in the Beit HaMikdash or in the Mishkan. The treasurers didn't have to be Kohanim, but they were more often than not Kohanim. So that's why the Sefer HaChinuch says it had to go to the hands of the Kohanim, but it didn't have to go to the hands of the Kohanim. And what were these half shekels used for? Again, in the first year, they were used to count the Jewish people and to actually build the Mishkan. After that, the Sefer HaChinuch continues, and they would place all of it in a compartment in the temple. And from there, they would take them out to buy daily offerings, additional offerings, and any sacrifice brought for the community and their libations, the salt with which they would salt the sacrifices, the wood for the arrangements, the bread of display, and the wage of the one making the bread. That's very interesting. The bread, the lechem hapanim, the special bread that was in the Beit HaMikdash from week to week, required a very special technique, the Gemara says. And that technique was only mastered by a few people, and they had to be paid for their mastery. And the wage of the one making the bread of display, the omer, the two breads, the red heifer, the goat sent away, and the golden strip it would carry. Okay, so you see all of these public, all of these elements of the service on the Beit HaMikdash were purchased with the half shekel. So the first year, the half shekel was used to count and to actually build the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan, and in subsequent years, they were used to buy these things that were needed for the public. Just a few interesting ideas here. It says that the salt and the wood that were used in the karbanot were purchased with this money. So every karban comes with salt. Every karban is salted as well. And even if a person is bringing their own private offering, the salt was provided by the temple funds, by the Beit HaMikdash funds. Similarly, the wood, right? If someone was bringing a karban, they didn't also have to bring their own wood to burn their karban, to burn their offering. The wood was provided by the funds of the temple of the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara also tells us that a few families had the privilege of being the ones to donate all of the wood to the Beit HaMikdash, but if there wasn't enough donated wood, then wood would have to be purchased, and this money went towards that purchase. Those are just a couple of interesting sidebars about how these things were accumulated in the Beit HaMikdash, and which items had to be provided privately, and which were paid for by public funds. I guess it's similar now, that certain things, you come here, you pay for your own lunch, but we give you the table to eat on, I guess, right? Or, you know, maybe if we're nice, we'll put out a pitcher of water with ice or something like that, right? You go to the restaurant, you got to buy your own dinner, but, you go to a good kosher deli, the pickles and the coleslaw beforehand are provided. Okay, so as is his custom, the author of the Sefer HaChinuch then explains the reason for this commandment, right? Why was a half shekel required? And he says as follows, Mishar Shei HaMitzvah, the root of the mitzvah, which is his way of explaining the reason for the mitzvah. We are in In paragraph two of that second source, so for those here in person, towards the bottom of page one where it says two, and you're following along on the screen, it is right over here where my cursor is, and I just highlighted a little bit. It is from the root of the commandments, the Sharshia Mitzvah, that the Holy One, blessed be He, wanted for the good of all of Israel and for the merit that the hand of all be equal in the matter of the sacrifice that are brought in front of Him regularly the whole year and in these matters that were mentioned. So first of all, He want the by making everyone give half shekel, everyone is then included in the merit gained from the bringing of the public offerings. Right, so everyone has a hand. Everyone has a hand in it. No matter who you are, what family you come from, everyone, every single time a public offering is brought, every single Jewish family can claim that they have a hand in it. So it's sort of a democratic element here, right? That the merit of giving, of bringing karbanot, is spread out equally. Everyone has the same share. Okay, that's the first reason why everyone had to do this. Then he offers something else. It is also that all be equal, both poor and rich, in one commandment in front of Him, to bring up their thought for the good in front of Him. The second is to level the playing field between the wealthy and the poor, right? By everyone giving the same thing, it's not only that everyone's represented, it's everyone's represented in the same amount, right? No one could claim that in a public karban, because I'm wealthy, I have more of a stake. Everyone can claim that they're the same. And it, like it says, all are equal in this one commandment, because in other commandments, it's not necessarily the same, because we do know that in some karbanot, sometimes it says if you're rich, you could bring a cow or a bull. And if you're poor, you could bring a sheep or a bird. So there's not equality. It depends on your level of wealth. But here, when it comes to this karban, not only is everyone represented, but also the poor and the rich are equal when it comes to this. So that's why it's half a shekel, because that is presumably a small enough amount of money which would give everyone a chance to participate equally. Okay, so that is the Sefer HaChinuch, really all by way of background, because now I want to delve into our actual topic about what the half shekel can teach about living a whole life. I want to stop here, see if any comments or questions before we go on to the next section.
What does HaChinuch mean?
Okay, one second, Betsy. There's a question here, and This went on until the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Every year, everyone had to bring one half shekel. And by the way, we now do it right before Purim. You may remember that sometimes in many synagogues, when you go into synagogue on Purim, there's a plate that says it's collecting for the half shekel. And we give a little charity to commemorate this mitzvah, which is no longer in force because there is no Beit HaMikdash. So Betsy, Sefer HaChinuch. HaChinuch means education, the book of education. And this is a book, we do not know the author. There is a considerable scholarly debate about who the author was. It was written in the Middle Ages. The author in the introduction writes that he wrote this book so his son would have something to do on Shabbat afternoon instead of wasting his time playing marbles with his friends. And he goes through what? For real, yeah. He goes through the 613 commandments and does three things, tells us the source for the commandment. He tells us the reason for the commandment that we just saw. And the third section in each mitzvah is some of the sources for the rules, where in the Talmud we can find the rules of this particular mitzvah. Carol asks, did the shekel actually cover the costs? I think so. I think the shekel did cover the costs. I'm not aware of any budget overruns. I think the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash ran a balanced budget. Good question. Okay, here we go. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Yes.
So, as I understand, every time you offer sacrifice, you have to burn an offering.
No, once a year. Just once a year, and it went to buy the communal offerings that everyone was represented by. What part of the year? Now we do it. I think it was always done around this time, around Adar time. I think it was done around this time. I think it was done around the time that we normally do it, which is around the time of Adar, about a month before Pesach. Okay, let's look at this really interesting explanation of this commandment from Rabbeinu Bachya ben Asher, which you see on page 2 in the handout and on the screen. This is really interesting. He says, 1/2 shekel of the sacred shekel, a rational approach. So this author does is often when it comes to his explanation of mitzvot, or his explanation of verses, he gives 3 explanations. One, what he calls the rational approach. The other is he calls a midrashic approach, and then a mystical approach. And so here we are going to read his rational approach to this mitzvah. A rational approach. The reason the Torah stipulated a half shekel when the Torah could just as easily have demanded a whole shekel of 10 gerah weight was to hint to every intelligent person that he must weigh his actions in life so as to give due weight to his spiritual needs as well as his physical needs. Okay, this is just fascinating in its own right, that basically splitting the shekel in half, right, reminds us that there are 2 halves to our person. One is our spiritual half, and one is our physical half. And we have to give, what he says, due weight to each, right? We can't ignore, certainly if we understand from a religious perspective, we can't ignore our spiritual needs, but also we can't ignore our physical needs. And he goes on to flesh this out a little bit. Ideally, he should be able to give full weight to both these requirements each, full shekel to each, right? Ideally. In fact, he ought to be able to use his body exclusively in the service of the Lord. However, on the other hand, sometimes attention to physical needs such as eating, drinking, sleeping, provision of clothing is essential for the continued ability to serve the Lord. So what Rabbeinu Bachya is doing here, he's setting up an interesting clash, right? First, he says, ideally, it would be great that we could give full weight to both. Vanachon, right? That which is impossible, right? I think he's setting up that it's impossible to give full. We can't spend all of our time on our spiritual needs, and we can't spend all of our times, or we shouldn't spend all of our times on our physical needs. So what are we supposed to do, right? There's some times where we have to eat, we have to sleep, and while we're doing those things, presumably we are not engaged in mitzvot when we eat. We're not engaged in mitzvot when we sleep. So what are we supposed to do? So one approach that's provided in many different Jewish sources is what he says here. However, on the other hand, sometimes attention to the physical needs such as eating, drinking, sleeping, provision of clothing is essential for the continued ability to serve God. What does that mean? That we have to eat in order to serve God or sleep in order to serve God. What does that mean? Right. We have to maintain our health and our energy so that we can serve God. Right. So I will ask you a question. If that is the case, how would you categorize eating? Let's just use eating. We need to eat so that we have the strength to serve God. Right, so how would you categorize eating? Would you categorize it as, let's say you're eating, and while you're eating, you have in mind that I am eating so that I have the strength to serve God. Or before you go to sleep, You say, I'm going to sleep now so that I wake up tomorrow morning, re-energized so that I could serve God. Right? How would you categorize that? Would you categorize that as a mitzvah in and of itself, or would you categorize it as something different? Elisheva?
I think it's a mitzvah.
Okay, explain.
Well, without it, you wouldn't be able to function. And the intention is to serve God, but it's kind of, you know, intertwined because like this half, the two halves. So okay. I'd say it's half of the mitzvah.
Great. So let me, I see two other hands raised. I'll get there. Let me give you this analogy, Elisheva, just to push back a little bit and see what you how you would answer. I go to the gas station to fill up my car with gas. I can't drive without the petrol. Is that what they say in Australia?
Yes, they do say that.
I heard they just opened up Australia.
Yes, but no flights yet, Rabbi.
Okay, well, good luck. I know you're planning to get home to see your kids.
I am. Thank you.
So I pull up to fill up my car with gas. Is that the same thing as driving? Is filling up my car an act of driving my car?
Well, it is. It's half the act, the same as what I said before. It's half the act.
You're sticking with it.
Well, okay. You can't drive your car without the petrol. It's impossible.
Correct. You can't drive your car without petrol, but that doesn't
the whole act requires the other half, which
definitely requires it. Definitely, I agree, but it doesn't mean that it's the same thing. Doesn't mean it's the same thing.
Okay, maybe it doesn't with the car, but I still hold with the mitzvah. I think.
Okay, great.
Look after yourself. You
good.
Know.
Yes. Okay. Body. Great. I got you, Ellie. Good.
Okay.
Good. Hold on 1 second, Carol.
So I was going to say, you know, pouring.
Could you turn up? Could you turn up your microphone? I'm having trouble hearing you.
There we go. Is that better?
Much better, yes.
So pouring the wine isn't the mitzvah. When you make kiddush, that's the mitzvah.
Okay, good.
The same thing, you know, when I bake the challah, the only part that's the mitzvah is taking challah. If baking it were a mitzvah, I would say a separate bracha overdoing all that.
Great. Okay, so Carol is pulling out the halachic ammunition here and saying if baking challah was a mitzvah, I'll give you another example. If building a sukkah was a mitzvah, right? Or if eating so that I can daven was a mitzvah, maybe there would be a bracha. Because generally speaking, we make brachot over mitzvot. So Carol's taking the other point that those things are not a mitzvah, but they are something else. Preparation for a mitzvah, very important, but not a mitzvah in and of itself. So we have set up a machloket here, a debate between Carol and Ellie. Okay, yes. Okay, so we have someone suggesting what Carol said. Okay, so when we eat the food, but okay, so we do make a bracha when we eat food, but we don't make a mitzvah bracha. We make a different type of bracha, the bracha that we're supposed to say because we're not allowed to derive benefit from this world without making a bracha. But we don't say asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav. Right? When we do a mitzvah, we say the formula of the bracha is asher kiddushanu mitzvotav, that you have sanctified us through your mitzvot to shake the lulav, to light the candles, to blow the shofar. When we eat, it's a different formula. So there is a bracha, correct? That's a good point, but it's a different formula. Okay, so back to our text. So Rabbeinu Bachya says, what we do when we eat or drink or sleep, it's essential for the continued ability to serve God. Keeping these factors in mind, the Torah, by speaking of a half shekel, hinted that it is aware that we suffer from this dichotomy of demands made upon us. Such powerful language, right? We suffer by this dichotomy. We have numerous sayings of our sages in which they interpret the verses in the Torah as reflecting this dual duty of the Jew. And then he goes on to talk about two verses that relate to the holidays, where one verse says the holidays are for God, another verse says the holidays are for us, and one solution in the Talmud is we split the day in half. Part of the day we spend eating and drinking, which is for us, and part of the day we spend studying and davening, which is for Hashem. So we have other examples in life where we are a split personality. Okay? So that's what Rabbeinu Bachya says, and that's his interpretation of why it's a half shekel, in recognition of this idea that we have to split our lives in half. Sometimes we have to serve God, sometimes we have to take care of ourselves, and even when we are taking care of ourselves so that we can eventually serve God, that's not quite the same as serving God. It is service of God, but it's service of God through maybe something else other than a mitzvah, some other category. So just to sharpen this for a moment, I want to draw your attention to a really interesting article, written by Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner. We've studied some of his letters before. And here, I gave you the cover page, and here the letter appears on page 4 of your handout. This is really interesting. Apparently, Rabbi Huttner got a letter from a student. Rabbi Huttner was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn. And he got a letter from a student who was distressed that he had to leave the yeshiva and go get a job. Okay? It's very distressing. I would also like to be able to sit and study all day, but sometimes we can't do that. But here, all jokes aside, he's really distressed about this because he feels that by leaving the yeshiva and going to get a job, he is leading a double life. Like he's an imposter. It almost sounds like he feels an imposter and he can't really serve God because he's leading this double life. So Rabbi Huttner offers this beautiful consolation while also telling this student off a little bit, right? It's really incredible. So let's look at this together. I'll read and translate. Michtavcha la'acher chazatra l'chul higiyanu l'nachon. I got your letter after you came back to the diaspora. So maybe he was studying in Israel and now he has to come back to America to work. Emet nitnat le'ha'amar ki harbe nenenti mikriyat michtavcha zeh. I derived much benefit, he says, from reading your letter. Hana'azot samcha mishnei sharashim. And the benefit, the enjoyment I got from this letter comes from two sources. One, mipnei she'tochin ha'divarim v'signonam aruchim b'tov tam v'dat. Your writing style was very nice, so I enjoyed just reading the letter. And the second, mipnei shehincha mitbatei begilui lev et hanaftulim asher benishmatcha. I also enjoyed this letter because you expressed with openness the complications of your soul. Right? I appreciate that you bared your soul in such an open way. V'nini bazel l'hagid lecha ki lefi dati hanaftulim halalu shehincha dan aleihem b'michtavcha mikoram hi tfisa mut'at. This is the truth is, these complications and difficulties and confusions that you're expressing are basically the result of an error. You're in error, he says. These are the result of a misunderstanding about what it means to live. Haroshem ha'klali ha'mitkabel midvarecha, the overall effect, the overall idea that I get from your letter, ki ze hi hanacha pshuta etzlecha, ki secular career, he double life. Maybe he wrote this letter back in English or used some English terms. You express, he says to the student, that your need to have a career, I don't know, selling insurance, whatever it is, a good career, right, Ron?
Right.
Being an accountant, right? He says, you seem to think that that means you're living a double life. Lemutar lahagid lecha ki meolam lo hayiti maskim b'shum ofen ledouble life. He says, I want you to know, I would never agree in 1,000 years for someone living a double life. A double life, in the eyes of the writer, and maybe in the eyes of Rav Huttner, means a life of conflict, where your career is in conflict with your Judaism. And Rav Huttner is saying, I don't accept this. I would never accept such a life. I would never accept such a life. Amna misha socher lo cheder. Now he gives an example. Misha socher cheder bebayet lachiot bo chay toshav. If someone rents a room to live in, the socher lo od cheder bimalon lachiot bo chay oreach, and then he rents another room in a hotel to be a guest, bivadai sheyesh lo double life. That's a double life. However, if you rent an apartment with two rooms, one where you sleep in, one where you eat in, one where you sleep in, one where you read in, that's not a double life. He says, yeshlo, not double life, yeshlo, broad life, not double life. Interesting, right? If you have an apartment with more than one room, going from room to room doesn't mean you're living a double life. The life, the room where you sleep in doesn't contradict the room where you eat in. It's just broad. He says, similarly, with you getting a secular career. Then he goes on to tell a story of a Dr. Wallach, who was a rabbi, who was a surgeon in Israel. And Dr. Wallach told Rav Huttner that every time before he would go into the operating room, he would ask the patient his name and his mother's name so he could say a prayer, a Misha Be'erach for them. And when I told, and Rav Huttner says, when I told this story to one of the great rabbis of Jerusalem, who presumably is only involved in Torah, this great rabbi said, we should all be jealous of this doctor, that he has such a great opportunity to be God's sort of arm to bring honor to God. Meaning this Dr. Wallach's not living a double life because he davens and does surgery. It's a broad life. He's serving God in both ways. This is very similar to what Rabbeinu Bachya said. When you're sleeping or eating, in order so that you can serve God, that is not a double life. That's a broad life. It may not be, selling insurance may not be a mitzvah, but it may be in the service of a mitzvah, right? And the surgery is maybe a little bit different because the surgery actually may be a mitzvah because there's an obligation to heal, right? Higida nila ha'emet ahuvi chavivi. Last line on page 4. It says, tell me the truth, my beloved, my dear one. Ha'im amirat perek tehillim lishlomo shel chole alidei harofeh ha'omed la'asot et hanituach. Ha'im zeh double life? Is saying a chapter of Psalms before one goes in to do an operation, is that a double life? No, of course not. That's a broad life. We believe in the power of prayer. We believe in the power of the doctors to heal. They're together, right? And he goes on to sort of give him more of this and to recognize that these things could be unified. Right, the having a career, even a secular career, and serving God can be unified, and could expand actually one's understanding of what it means to serve God. Yes. True. That's right. Right. Selling insurance provides mental comfort to people because now they don't have to worry what's going to happen to their family after they die. That's right. Okay. He says towards the end, Kol nikuda chadasha shetirchosh lecha rak tarchiv et ha'agul Aval ha'achdut eino zazam imkoma. Every new element of your life that you add only widens the circle, but the notion of it all being part of one service of God never goes away. It's a beautiful letter. And I think it very much connects to what we saw before in this notion of what the Rabbeinu Bachya said, that I could eat in the service of God and I could sleep in the service of God because I'm doing all those things in order so that I'll have the strength to serve God. It sounds a little bit like that is what Rav Huttner is saying. He does not go so far as to say that working that is a mitzvah in and of itself, right? But it could be in the service of a mitzvah. I work, so now I have money to give tzedakah. I work so that I have time to study Torah later on. I work so I could do all other things which are mitzvot, right? He doesn't go so far as to say those things are a mitzvah. It's possible to read it that way, but he doesn't go that far explicitly. However, Chassidut made many, many contributions. One of the most interesting contributions of Chassidut is something called Avodah Begashmiut, serving God through the physical. There's Avodah Sheberuchniut, serving God through the spiritual, what we call mitzvot, the explicit mitzvot. And then there's something called serving God through the physical, serving God through non-explicit mitzvot. And here we're going to set up a dichotomy between what we saw in Rabbeinu Bachya, or the example I gave of filling up the car with gas, and Chassidut. So I gave a couple of examples, but I want to read one where he explicitly mentions. Okay, so let's look at this one. Page 7 in the source book. I have it. It's the Kedushat HaLevi. I have it in English. Do I have it in Hebrew? I have it in Hebrew and in English. We're going to read the English Uplifting the World. Okay? You see that there. It is written in the Shulchan Aruch that a man's intention while eating, drinking, and performing all of his other physical and material needs should be to gather strength in order to serve the Creator and thus fulfill the verse, "In all thy ways acknowledge him." That sounds to me a lot like the previous source, Rabbeinu Bachya, and maybe Rav Huttner, where those things are not a mitzvah in and of themselves, but they are so that we can perform mitzvah, right? So we gather strength to serve God. Comes along Rav Leib Yitzchak Abarditchev and says the following. So actually, he says this. There is a profound analysis of these matters in the writings of the Ari. So what he's saying is that the Ari, a Kabbalist, and this idea, as I mentioned, is more spelled out by the Hasidim, says that these physical things that we do are not so that we can serve the Creator. They actually are in service of the Creator, but not quite the way we understood before. And he explains. Probably the Shulchan Aruch and the Ari intended the same idea, namely that God created in his world four levels of beings, minerals, plants, animals, and humans. So I want to just take you to a footnote. Number 39, if you look on the bottom of the page, footnote number 39, in the middle, he says, note that the author here makes the assumption that the Shulchan Aruch and Luria agree. This assumption is not necessarily warranted, as I just pointed out. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak probably finds it more prudent to avoid positing a controversy between them and having to choose one side over the other. What's the controversy? The controversy would be, is eating actually service of God, or is it in preparation to serve God? Which is good too, but not an actual mitzvah itself. So here, Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditchev wants to read into the Shulchan Aruch that it means it's a mitzvah in and of itself. But as we pointed out, it may just be a preparation for a mitzvah, meaning eating is, it could be a religious thing because it helps us serve God, but it may not be a mitzvah in and of itself. So, but he wants to say that they're the same. And how are they the same? Because there are four levels: minerals, plants, animals, humans. Because of his loving kindness, he desires that all things be elevated to the higher rung, which is the human rung. That is, that the mineral should be elevated to the category of plant. And as the animal eats the plant, it elevates. And as the animal eats the plant, it elevates the plant to the animal level, because now it gets absorbed into the animal. And moreover, helps raise the mineral to the animal, right? So when afterwards, when a man eats of an animal, all of the lower are raised to that of humans. This is a very Kabbalistic idea. I'll try to simplify it. I don't fully understand it myself, that when we eat an animal who ate plants and minerals, by absorbing it into our being, it's elevated. So in that case, the actual eating is a mitzvah, is a service of God. Because God, according to the Kabbalists, want all things to be elevated. So correct. I would be, as a vegetarian, I'm ruining it, right? Although I am elevating the vegetables. I'm just not elevating the meat. I'm just not elevating the meat, right? I'm elevating the vegetables and minerals. Now, listen to this. This is why the benedictions on food use the present tense. Blessed are thou who creates the fruit of the tree or the earth, rather than the past he created. For when a man eats and enjoys food, all the elements comprising that food are elevated from the categories of mineral, plant, and animal to that place of human. So they're being created at that moment, right? So this is different. I'm not eating so that later I will have strength to daven. I'm eating right now. And so therefore, that eating is in service of a mitzvah. Right now, I'm serving God. Right? Right, exactly. When you eat that hot fudge sundae, which is made out of the animal or the mineral, right? You are elevating it to the human. And that eating is a mitzvah. So that's what the Hasidim mean, right? By avoda begashmiut. The act right now is not in service of a mitzvah I'm going to do later. The act right now is in service of God. That's the difference. That's the difference I was trying to point out earlier, which Carol and Elisheva set up on their own, right? That is the difference between looking at it the way the Shulchan Aruch did, notwithstanding Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev's attempt to unify them, and looking at it the way the Hasidim did. One other really beautiful example of this. The last page of the source book, page number 9. Then we'll take Eli Sheva's question. This I really thought to be just beautiful. From Eli Melech of Lezhinsk. Our father Jacob served God with his particular attribute, which is Tiferet, beauty. These are different Kabbalistic attributes. And he served God with beauty. What does that mean to serve God with beauty? This is really nice. Hence, whatever he said, heard, or did, or ate, he derived from it a lesson for the glorification, the beautification of the Creator. For instance, when he ate something delicious, he considered that the food was created, and who then instilled the good taste in it, if not the Creator? And if the food has such a delicious taste, then surely the goodness of that taste reflects the Creator himself without limit. So did Jacob view material things. So for Jacob, every time he ate, so let's go back to the ice cream sundae. Every time I eat a beautiful, delicious ice cream hot fudge sundae, and the taste is so amazing, I think to myself, well, who created that? Not Tom Carvel, right? God created that. And if God created that taste, and this is sort of an offshoot, how much more beautiful or delicious is God, God's self? When I think that, I'm serving God because that's an appreciation of God. And therefore, eating in and of itself is an appreciation of God. So we go back to the half. Let's take Elisheva's question, then I'll wrap it up. Go ahead, Elisheva.
Well,
Well, it's not a question. Is it Ein Ad Milvado? Have I said that correctly?
Yes.
And to me, this is the beauty of the interconnectedness of everything. And
yes,
we're souls in bodies, but so is everything else interconnected.
Beautiful. Yes.
And I do find that really beautiful.
Beautiful. And you're channeling the end of Rav Huttner's letter, because he said, we say this notion, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, God is one. And the halacha is we're supposed to elongate, to say Echad, we're supposed to elongate that one, which he homiletically interprets, make everything part of that one. Your secular job, your davening, it's all part of one. The Hasidim really put, back to Marilyn's point, the icing on the cake by saying the oneness is not just I eat so that later I can serve God. The oneness is even more profound than that. The eating of that Sunday is in itself a service of God. Okay? That takes a high level of kavana, right? Of concentration.
Also, by interpreting it that way, lead to gluttony.
So Andrew says, can't that lead to gluttony? I just want to keep serving God. I want to keep eating God. I want to keep serving God by eating. Yeah, but there are other commandments in the Torah that remind us that we're not allowed to do that. So, yeah, but that's where we have to put it all together. It's all part of that same one. That's a good question. So go back to, let's just wrap it up. So we have the mitzvah of half shekel, which we saw the understanding of the Sefer Achinuch. It's an equalizer. But then we saw Rabbeinu Bachya, who reminds us half shekel reminds us that sometimes our lives are cut in half. We have physical needs and spiritual needs, but we can somehow bring them closer together by remembering that the physical needs are for the service of God. And this goes to everything. This goes even to relaxing, right? Sometimes I just need to relax, because if I don't relax, I'm going to explode, and I'm not going to be able to function properly, and I certainly won't be able to serve God. It's not only the obvious things like eating and drinking. Right? And then we have Rav Huttner, who's somewhere in the middle between Rabbeinu Bachya, who says the eating is so we can serve God later, and Rav Huttner, who says it's all part of this the same oneness. And then we get the most radical explanation of this idea. The radical way to bring, that's why the title, right? How the half shekel can teach us about how we live as a whole person. Right? We could bring the physical and the spiritual together by recognizing this radical way that the Hasidim do it, that even in the physical things that we do, avodah shebegashmiut, there is actual service, there is actual service of God by elevating the food that we eat to the human level, or by recognizing where the deliciousness or the beauty of the delicious of the things we eat or the beauty of the things we see come from. And in the moment, as we're eating, in the moment, being cognizant that is all part of God. There are other examples of this idea of avodah begashmut, but these are some of them. So we have essentially like 2.5 or 3 different ways to see how the notion of recognizing that we are a split being, but we can work to bring them together to serve God in the fullest way. Okay, everyone, thank you for joining. And I hope everyone goes out now.
Thank you, Rabbi.
I'll meet you at Baskin Robbins later for some service. Now for some service of God. Services this Shabbat will be held at Baskin Robbins. All right. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.